Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up! It's time for Just Chicago's Neighborhood Talk with Clifton Pierce. A Canon Media and Axe Entertainment Artists, Inc. production.
Welcome, welcome. You are tuned in live to the Justice Chicago video show with Clifton Pierce. We are live and in full effect straight out of Chicago, Illinois. Clifton, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you, my dear?
I am doing well. Just still in a high spirit from last night's event, the book signing. And the birthday celebration, it was so much fun. It was a success, and I just want to thank you publicly. I mean, I'm just so grateful for everything that you've done for me in that manner. I'm glad that we connected in that way. So thank you so much.
Well, in case for my new listeners that's listening in, this is my fifth week. And those of you that didn't know, Candace has written a book called Dreamland. She's from Florida, and so she's here in Chicago. She came in this weekend for us to have a book signing yesterday, Saturday, at the 50-yard line. I think we had a great time. The Nick Cannon crew and family came in. It was a good time we had by all. And it's really relevant, you know, that when I chose that particular song to be my theme song, what's going on, 1972. And even today, that song is relevant, you know, like, what's really going on? What's going on? What's going on in Chicago? What's going on in the world? What's going on in our community? But at this time, I want to call my guest who, make sure who called in. Bill Grayson, are you there?
Bill Grayson, hey. If you're here, press 1. Bill Grayson?
Yes, this is he.
Okay. Also, right. I'm looking for Ernie Durham and Pam Durham.
Ernie, could you press 1 on your down tone so we can see that from our
Yes,
end?
I'm here, Cliff.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Is Pam, are you on board? Pam Durham?
Ms. Durham, can you press 1 on your down tone?
So how you doing, Doc?
We'll be notified. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is she on board?
Ms. Pam, if you're on board, could you press 1 on your dial tone? That way we'll be notified and we can unmute you.
Okay, my next guest
is... I'll let you know.
How about Jimmy Mays? Let's see if Jimmy's on board.
Roll call. This is roll call. Jimmy, are you on board? Press 1 on your dial tone. You know.
Okay, we haven't heard from him yet.
Wait, hold on, Jimmy. What's his last name again?
Mays. Jimmy Mays.
Jimmy Mays, are you on board? Okay. Not yet. As soon as I. Oh.
Okay. What about Muhammad Ali's son?
Okay, Muhammad. What's his name? Muhammad Ali's son. What's his name?
Muhammad Ali.
We have quite a few. Okay, Muhammad Ali, are you on the line? Press 1. Well, I'm going to ask that the callers really call in soon because we have been, the spaces are very limited, and so it's good to dial in as soon as you can. But as soon as they are on the air, I'll let you know. Muhammad Ali, press 1 on your dial tone. Pam, press 1. On your dial tone. Okay.
Okay, we set?
Yeah, we're set.
All right. Listen, I want to say welcome aboard to all my guests and everything. This is my fifth week of doing this show, Nick Cannon Media. And once again, they came in town yesterday to promote Candace's book, which is called Dreamland, and also to promote me and welcome me to the Candace family. I was talking about the Candace family, to the Nick Cannon family. And it's been a pleasure. I want to talk about the late 60s when blacks owned and aspired to own businesses. And right now, I'm on 79th Street, and I'm looking at all these places that are boarded up at one time with very thriving businesses. Beauty shops all up and down 79th Street. At the time, I was selling clothing, and I just went in and out of each beauty shop selling clothing. I was there when Saul Sheen, part of Ed Gardner, he was a teacher at Carver High School, and he came up with this hair formula, and he would actually go to the beauty salon asking these people to use his product, not buy it, just use it. And he became the largest hair company in the world, black-owned. So one of the things that I'm finding in our new community today is that our young people are not aspiring to own businesses. So today I'm having two giants in the hair industry on the show to talk about business and just talk about whatever they want to talk about. And I'm going to start with Bill. Bill, would you like to tell us about who you are and what you are?
Yes, I will. Thank you so much, Mr. Pierce, for having me on the show today. And to all the listeners, my name is Bill Grayson, and I am the owner of Gold Banner Beauty Products. Gold Banner Beauty Products is a black-owned, family-owned health and beauty brand. We focus solely on creating products for curly, wavy, kinky, curly, textured hair. We believe Gold Banner Beauty Products and healthy product ingredients promote healthier lives, skin, and hair resilience. This company was formed back in the early 70s by my late mother. She started formulating a hair care product when she had problems with her own hair. She discovered she had high blood pressure and she was prescribed medication. She was prescribed medications that damaged and dried out her hair, causing her to lose her hair. So, like, this is back in the 70s. She went to stores trying to buy products to help her to grow her hair back. And after she bought product after product, she didn't receive the results that she was looking for. So, being a natural product enthusiast, she started developing her own products, and which had great efficacy for her own hair. And then she started letting some of her friends and family members use the product. And that's how the business started, because they had the same results. They had great efficacy, and the problems with the damage and the breakage ceased, and they started having the type of hair that they wanted to have. So with that being said, my late mother passed in the 90s, in the late 90s, in the early 2000s when we had the recession. I was director of provider reconciliations for Michael Reese Hospital. And I was making a six-figure compensation package every year. But like I said, during the 70s and recession, I lost my job. Unable to regain that financial stability in the volatile market we experienced back then from 2006 on to 2010, actually, I got together all of her formulas and started working with some other chemists that she used to work with when she developed the business. And these are big-time people in the industry, like Mr. Dudley, and we work with the Luster. These are people who had brands already on the market. So this is how I got back into the market, into the industry, working with my mother's business, which was her passion, which I developed a passion for. And so since that time, I've done it, nothing else but produce products, natural hair care products. We have three different brands on the market right now. The brand most sold in retail markets is the brand Good to Grow. Good to Grow brand is a brand that works well for black hair care, for people that have damaged hair, they have breaking and balding edges. We have a great product we call the Edge Resuscitator. And this product has worked wonders for women with balding areas of the scalp. And that product, again, is Good to Grow. You can find Good to Grow on our website at good2gro.com. And we have another brand of products called Moisture Curl. Moisture Curl is a brand for the curly hair people that like to wear their hair natural, and they like to exemplify curl definition and moisture and healthy, shiny hair. Moisture Curl is a brand that provides all these things. We have nothing but natural products. And then we have a salon brand called Resilience, which is the sister of Moisture Curl. And it provides stylists with larger sizes of our products and other styling products like spritzes and foam wraps and things of that nature. But we only produce natural hair care products. All of our products are formulated with only natural ingredients.
Okay. Well, Bill, let me ask you this question here. One of the questions I want to ask you, Bill, is how has this pandemic affected your business? Are you on store shelves? I heard you say that you can buy it online, but are you able to buy it as well in different beauty supply stores?
Well, right now, Cliff, I'm going to say it like this. Fortunately for us, we are not on store shelves right now. Because during the beginning of the pandemic, we've seen a lot of our colleagues in the industry sustain a lot of account payable issues. They're starting to come back now, but we've been successful on Walmart.com. We've been successful on Amazon.com and our own website. But the reason I said fortunately right now regarding the B&Bs and other stores like Walgreens and Walmart, this has been a serious time on people financially. And what happens when you're in those type of establishments? If your products don't sell at a certain clip, you're responsible for purchasing those products back.
Okay, Bill, I want you to hold it right there. Okay, yeah. I want you to hold it right there. I'm gonna bring Ernie on. Mr. Durham, you ready?
I'm here, Cliff.
Okay, now, Mr. Durham, where are you located?
Well, I live in Arizona right now, but I'm from Chicago.
I understand that.
Out here. Okay.
Now, Mr. Durham, how were you inspired as part of the hair care industry, and how were you able to get financing for that?
Well, I started as a 13-year-old boy cutting hair in my bedroom for 25 cents a head out in Oak Hill Gardens. And speaking of Ed Gardner, he was my grammar school assistant principal. And he was also one of my mentors because everything that you say he did, I watched him do it. And I later on became, in competition with him. I had a company not as big as his, but, you know, I was right out there with him and all the rest of them. So back in the 70s with the actually manufacturing the hair care product. But I started as a barber and a beautician, And I had both of the licenses, a beauty culture teacher's license, a beauty culture, well, a barber teacher's license. And then I started manufacturing hair products in the basement of one of my beauty and barber salons. And my customers would buy my product, and they would sometimes travel from the west side all the way back to the south side just to get their hair restored, because that's what I went by, the hair doctor, back during that time in the 70s. And they would sometimes go to stores like Walgreens looking for the product, and they Walgreens didn't have it, so Walgreens came to me. And when the beauty supply store started coming to me for the product, because my customers loved it so much, I didn't have time to do hair anymore. All I could do was manufacture the product and sell to those big stores. So this is how I got into the industry. I developed a product called the Leisure Curl that was much different from the original, the traditional curl, the wet, drippy, oily curl that was out on the market. Mine was dry, and it was a more of a wavy look. So the chain stores had to develop a new category called the dry curls category just for my product. So that really got me going, and the rest is history. We started selling our product in Europe and around the country, in the Caribbean, the United States, Canada, some African countries, and it just took off. And that's basically the story of how we got started.
Well, let me ask you this. How were you bottled at the time? How was you with your logo and your silk screening and all that? How was you able to do that? Where did you do go to get that?
Well, there were black businesses in Chicago at the time that did all of that, graphic artists, you know, all around Chicago. But there was never any financing. You mentioned something about that. The money that I made from styling hair is what I used to buy the bottles and the jars and the sprayers and the chemicals. I couldn't buy too much at a time, but it evolved into a large $20 million operation later on. But we never got a loan, because just like now, there are very few loans available for our people. So
okay, let me stop you right there, because I want you and Bill to speak on this. You know, they're giving away all these grants and all this money and all this money, and is it really working? You know, are we getting business opportunities there? And like in your case, and once again, I'll say that when I was come on 79th Street as a young guy, every storefront was open. Just like we had black silk screeners, we had black illustrators, we had black this, black that, and today we have none of that, you know. And I just want to know what happened. How did it go away like that? You know, it's a statistical fact that the death of a founder of a black business so many times is also the death of the business. Mr. Garden is a prime example. You know, he no longer owns his business. George Johnson, John Johnson. I can go on and on with these various people. Al Johnson at Cadillac. We as a black people, we're marching backwards when it comes to economics. I'm not a person who professes to tell a child to go to college and get an education, because once he go to college and get an education, now he got to find a job. So I believe very much in being vocationally trained, and not only that, but thinking above about having your own. Young people out there, if you're working for somebody, if you're working for a store, look and see where the product come from and see if you can do the same thing. If you can do it for them people, you can do it for yourself. So one of the things I really wanted, the reason why I wanted you two guys to come on, because I wanted you all to inspire our young people to have their own. Have their own. You know, I'm in an area over here in West Inglewood where there's no black owning any business. Service station, restaurant, nothing. No black owns any business of any kind. So therefore, if our children don't see a black owner, nothing, they don't aspire to own nothing. So that's very relevant to me. But go ahead, Mr. Dunn, please.
Well, this is all by design, Cliff. First of all, they took all of the prominent black businesses, just like they did Motown and BET. And when those companies started making a lot of money, they buy them. They buy them right out from under them. So that's one thing. And then another thing is black Americans generate more money than, we're the 12th largest economy in the world. So that means that we generate a lot of money, but we don't have stores in our neighborhoods to spend our money with, and that's by design, too. because they're taking 98% of our income, because when we get paid, we don't have anybody to spend our money with. So we have to give our money to other races of people. So all of this is by design. If they gave us business loans, that would empower us, and then we would be able to keep more than just 2% of our money. This is why the average black American is living below the poverty level, is because we're only keeping 2% of our money, because we don't have black businesses in our neighborhoods to spend the money with. So consequently, these foreign businesses take the money out of our neighborhood and take it to where they live, and they live prosperous, and we live poor. And the only way we're going to stop that is through unity.
Okay, hold it right there, Mr. Durham. Bill.
Yes.
Bill. Okay, I remember when you were working real hard to get with Walgreens. What happened with that account? Because let me tell you what I know about that so many times is that because we had a contract one time, me and my friend, we had a contract with Windows for the school board, okay? And they telling us that you'll get your money in 90 days. The average black company can't wait 90 days to get their money. So tell us about Walgreens and what happened with you, Bill, with Walgreens.
Absolutely, Cliff. I want to just first say that I'd like to take my hat off to Mr. Durham. He's a leader in our industry, well-respected, and definitely a mentor to many people through his business acumen. And I just want to take my hat off to you, Mr. Durham, and tell you we thank you for all of your hard work and trailblazing in the industry.
Because thank you, Bill. I appreciate that.
Through your hard work, it left opportunities for a guy like me. But to answer your question, Cliff, I did get in Walgreens. I'm also a disabled veteran. I was in combat and I got injured. So what had happened? That's just a little personal story on my side. But we got in Walgreens. I got in Walgreens through trial by testing and marketing my products in one store. Then we got to four stores. The product sold. We got up to 150. Now, this is what happened in my particular case. We were going into the warehouse. We had done all the paperwork. Everything was done when Boots Alliance purchased Walgreens, which stopped all the new products from coming in because they were bringing all the products from England and the UK to the United States and they needed that shelf space. So all of the small black businesses that were in this program that they called supplier diversity were bumped. And, yeah, the 90 days, we'll get to that too. But what happened when Boots came in, They didn't have any respect for black business. They told everybody that they had to leave the shelves and whatever that product that they didn't take out, they had brought in, they were going to have to pay them. You know, Walgreens had this real hardcore attitude toward us because of the fact that they felt we needed them more than they needed us. So what had happened, they put a couple people out of business because once they put their products out of the stores, they still had to pay Walgreens for whatever they felt that they owed them. But what had happened in my particular case, when they asked me to leave Walgreens, my particular case was different from all the other supplier diversities because I went in under a tax deferment that they took on my company because I was a veteran. So what had happened, when it was time for me to leave, I had spoke to a couple of my people that I counsel with. They said that Walgreens can't put your products out the stores because they took a tax benefit off of your company. So in my particular case, Walgreens had to sell out all of my product during that time. And we never did We've had some communications, but Walgreens, they want companies now, black-owned companies that's making $5-10 million in the door. There's no more supplier diversity or none of that. So if I said to myself, if I'm making $5 or $10 million, I don't think I would want to go to Walgreens, because first of all, Walgreens wants 45-50% of your revenue off the top. So you got to be very careful when you're selecting a distributor for your product. Hello?
Hello. It's Jimmy Mays.
I think they got we got dropped off somewhere.
No, you're still on the air.
This
is Candace. We're going to go ahead and bring on Ms. Shelly Mancion to say a few words. She's from the Nick Cannon Network. Shelly?
Okay.
Hey, we had, like, the time of our lives in Chicago. We're still here now. We're actually eating in, like, a top restaurant here in Chicago. And thanks for inviting us out. It's been, like, just fabulous. I have a question for you, Cliff. Well, it looks like there's a lot of... I would like to cover media. Sometimes it can be where everyone is aware and I can just not be in the way. Right now, I'll go. Me,
wake up. It's time for Just Chicago's Neighborhood Talk with Clifton Pierce, a Cannon Media and Axe Entertainment Artists, Inc. production.
Okay, so this is Candace Carey, one of the hosts for Clifton Pierce Justice Chicago Radio Show. And while we work on getting him back on the air, you know, sometimes this stuff happens, it's still technology, and it's not completely 100% proof. Here he is. All right, Clifton.
Yeah. Yes, can you hear me?
All right, so you're back. Yeah. You
okay,
had a
baby.
Question. You have someone here that you wanted an interview with. Let me find out. Sir, can you introduce yourself?
My name is Jimmy Mays.
Jimmy Mays. That name sounds familiar.
How
you doing, Jimmy? Hey, listen, let me say this out, folks. My radio broadcast here is for my people, man. I'm so fortunate to be hooked up with the Cannon Media people, and I'm grateful to showcase all my people, whether they're in business, entertainment, or anything. Jimmy.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Jimmy is a Hall of Fame recording artist, okay? And the other thing about Jimmy Mays is that he was a drummer for Jimi Hendrix. So, Jimmy, tell them a little something about yourself.
Yeah, well, I play drums now and sing the blues, but back in the day, I played and recorded with Jimi Hendrix. I played and recorded with Jimmy Reed, played with Lil Walter Jacobs, Jody and the Starlighters, Martha the Vandellas. Well, Mr. Cliff, I'll put it like this. I was doing an interview with Dorothy Moore here in Mississippi. And Dorothy Moore told the people, say, don't ask Jimmy who he played with. Ask him all he didn't play with. So I had to throw that in from Dorothy Moore. But it's been a good career. And the Lord is in the blessing business. I like to say that. And I'm happy for you with your radio show, Cliff.
Now, I say that then, Jimmy. I'm sorry.
Yes, sir. I said I'm happy for you with your show.
Well, you know what, man? It's a golden opportunity for my community again. And this young fellow here was heard me talking, and he wanted to ask me about the show and everything. But anyway, this is a chance for our people to be heard. Let me give you an example. Last week, I had Cicero Blake on my show. Those of you that don't know, Cicero is a blues artist, one of the best right out of Chicago right here. And so I had him on the show, and one of the things he mentioned was the fact that he had sung some songs and did some recordings and didn't get paid for it. Well, as it turned out, an agent in California heard about it, okay? And this agent, she's a young white girl, and as she turned out, she is the agent for Kevin O'Leary on Shark Tank, okay?
Oh.
And they're creating a new series about people who have done things and never got paid for it. So she called and asked me, could she put Cicero on her show? So these are the opportunities that are coming about when it comes to my show and why it's so important that I keep this happening. I want to thank the Nick Cannon Media people for allowing me to be part of that group, because I'm the type of guy, if I climb up on the roof with a ladder, I'm going to leave my ladder there so everybody else can climb up on it. But Jimmy, tell me a little something about, tell me about the book that you've written, Jimmy. What's that all about? And where are you located now?
That's a book that was released initially in 2014. It's called The Amazing Jimmy Mays, Sideman to the Stars. It talked about all the ups and downs in the music business, and it talked about the musicians that back up the stars. And the sidemen never get a play or very little recognition. The stars get all the recognition. So I tried to put this book out, and it'll be re-released again the last of this month. And it gives a good opportunity for people to read about what the side man goes through playing behind the stars.
Okay. Well, let me say this here. I talked to Holly Maxwell. Some of you all know who she is. And she's putting together a concert for all our entertainers who are out of work right now, not getting no income coming in, don't have insurance, the whole thing like that. And so I will be letting that everybody know about that. And once again, in case you all didn't know, I want you all to know that this show and this radio show that I'm speaking on going all over the world. A young lady got a radio show in New York. She called me and asked me when I get off of my radio show, would I call and be on her radio show today? So the doors is opening up. But I'm going to say again, the young lady that's an agent for Kevin O'Leary, I don't even watch Shark Tank, but everybody know who Kevin O'Leary is from Shark Tank. She called me yesterday and she said, well, Ms. Pierce, seeing as how you know so many people, anybody you know that has done something and not got paid for it, call her and we're going to see that we can help them get their money. So this is kind of doors that this program that I have is opening for everybody. But listen, I'm going to take a 5-minute break, because when I come back, I want to talk to Bill Grayson. I want to talk to Mr. Durham. And Jimmy, I want to talk to you again. But this time we're going to talk about reparations. How can black people get paid today?
I didn't get paid a dime for recording with Jimi Hendrix.
So you stay right there, and we're going to take a break, and we'll be back for heaven's sake.
Wake up. It's time for Just Chicago's Neighborhood Talk with Clifton Pierce, a Cannon Media and Axe Entertainment Artists, Inc. production.
Right.
Well, all right. Well, all right. Well, all right. All right, Candace, we're back on the air.
Yes, sir, we are back on the air.
Okay, have we got anyone call in?
Well, caller, I'm looking for Muhammad. Muhammad, if you're on the air.
This is still Miss
Pam. Okay.
Okay, so right now I got Jimmy Mays, I got Ernest Durham, and I got Bill Grayson. Am I correct?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, you got Jimmy here. Well, could I say this because I have to run out and do
something? Go ahead, Jimmy.
I'll call you back at home, but I want to let you know that I'm glad you talked to that lady out in California because I know five of Jimi Hendrix CDs playing drums on different songs and never got a penny for that. So I wish you remember that so when you talk to that lady again, okay?
Okay, tell me more about it, Jim, before you go.
I'll tell you about the songs. Beg your pardon?
Okay. So you got to run, huh, Jimmy?
Yes, but I'm going to call you back at home because I have to make a run now. But I appreciate the interview, and I'll get back to you with the Hendrix information, okay? And congratulations on you and your show and everybody there, Cliff, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Everybody.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bill, let me go back to you. You with me?
I'm with you.
Okay, let's talk about how you feel about reparations. And so many times people are saying today that in order for them to go into business, they got to get a bank loan and they can't get a bank loan. Did you have a loan? And if you did have a loan, where did it come from? Or were you using your own front money? And next thing is that how do you feel about reparations in regards to the distribution of your product, putting it on shelves, and how we talk about that? Go ahead, Bill.
Okay. When I started Good to Grow, we did not have a bank loan. I worked a job, and by every extra dime that I had, I put it into my business. Every time that I applied for a bank loan, I was always denied. The only way they would offer me a loan if I put up collateral. No bank would take a chance on us like they would do a lot of other people that we know of. It was very hard to finance a black-owned business. If you're not making a million already, it's hard to get the money through the traditional banking system. As far as reparations, that's something that people have looked at and discussed and throughout business, political, and all different type of sectors. But me, in my personal opinion, I believe that the government owes a debt of gratitude to the African-American race in general. This country was built on the backs of black people, and we are the last ones to be given any credit or worthy to be thought to be worthy of taking a chance on. So how that's done, Cliff, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a clue how they're going to do it, but I know that with a Republican Senate in the House, they don't even want to put reparations on the table for black people. So how that's going to happen, it remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, listen, Bill, I want to thank you for coming on the show. More than anything else, I want to thank you for giving my daughter a job. Okay. You asked me about it. We both spoke about it. And it has really helped her, not financially as much as it's helped her development. And I just want to say over the air with 10,000 people listening that you gave her an opportunity and she's excelled with it. And so I want to say thank you to that. And I want to say thank you for calling in tonight.
Absolutely, Cliff. I appreciate you having me. You know, we had Good to Grow. We believe in supporting our community, and Kim has been an asset to the company from the time that I met her and met you. So, you know, we're just we're happy for you and your show, and I'd like for your audience to go to our website at good2gro.com for healthy growing hair.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, Mr. Durham, you still with me?
I'm still here, Cliff.
Okay, let's talk about, Mr. Durham, when it comes to you, because you probably have more time in than anybody, let's talk about the business aspects and how you feel about reparations today. What's your take on all of this?
Well, remember, reparations, just like business loans and businesses in our neighborhoods, will all empower our people. And this is something that the system doesn't want done. They don't want us to empower ourselves. So if they gave us reparations, that would be empowering yourself. So they definitely owe it to us. They gave the Japanese reparations for being put in concentration camps during World War II. They gave the Jewish people reparations for something that happened in Germany that didn't even happen here in the United States, and they're still paying them. And, you know, everybody knows about slavery. Like Bill just said, I mean, black people built this country, free labor. So it was built on free labor. So they owe it to us more than anybody else. But like I said, it would empower us. And the whole key or the whole agenda is for us not to empower ourselves. So our only alternative is to unite. We've got to start working together. And I think one of the biggest reasons that we're disrespected by everybody is because we don't have the unity that the other races have. And until we start sticking together and selling our products to each other, and to Bill's point, I don't want my product on the shelf anywhere. I've been there and done that. I mean, you've got large companies like Walmart and Allies that still owe me money from the old days. So they just don't pay you. They'll run you out of business. And this is my second time around with the Legion Curl. I was out with Chicago Curl back in 82 when I made my first $2 million. By 85, I was broke. I mean, they wouldn't pay me. So I had to come out with the Leisure Curl in late 85 and early 86, and my policy was no credit. If you wanted it, you paid for it, and you paid up front. And that worked for me because I created a demand for the product. And so now what I'm doing is selling my product online and through word of mouth to my people. I manufacture black hair care products, and that's who I sell my products to. I let the people make the profit that the stores would normally make. Because the stores, if you're not a multi-million-dollar business, you can't afford to sell to stores. It's just the ego they want you to have your product on those shelves. But you have to be able to afford to sell to those people.
That's
right. Because if they order 200 dozen of products, let's say two dozen products to go in each of their stores, you've got to manufacture that product, you've got to give it to them on credit, and then if it doesn't sell, they're going to send it back to you. You can't afford that, especially starting out.
No, if it's yours, it's yours. Well, let me ask you this, Mr. Dunn. What would be your economic plan if you had the blueprint to bring us up from our bootstraps? What would be your economic plan?
Well, step one would be organization. We've got to organize. We've got to get into the mindset that we belong to an organization like every other group of people. They all have organization. And when the word comes down from the top of the organization, they follow suit. They follow the plan. And they become very prosperous. And we've got to organize first. And then if we're mistreated with police brutality or discrimination, we boycott. We withhold our most precious commodity, which is our money, because we're the largest or the biggest spenders in America. And that's our most valuable asset, is our money. And we've got to hold on to it until we get what we want.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, you all heard from Mr. Durham. I hope we hear back from him. I hope to have him on the show sometime again. Mr. Dunn, I hope you enjoy being with me. You know, I'm an amateur with this, but the opportunity has come about for me, and I'm just trying to open the doors for my people because I'm prejudiced, but I'm economically prejudiced, sir. You know, let's spend money by our own people.
Well, we have to. If we're going to survive and going forward as a race of people, we've got to drop all of these little silly things about not spending money with each other for nonsense reasons. We've got to spend money with each other. We're making everybody else in the world rich. We are a blessing to every other race of people except ourselves. And I mean, hair stands up on my arms and the back of my neck when these people talk about going to the Egyptians, getting their hair done and getting the nails done at these, and I'm not against any race of people making money.
That's not what we're talking about.
People in the world. That's who black people are. We are blessing to people, but we have to be a blessing to ourselves. It's foolish if we don't bless ourselves.
Okay, with that, Mr. Durham, I'm going to say thank you for joining us. I'm going to bring you back on the show, so we're always going to talk about the economic part of this thing. And once again, I want to say thanks a lot to you, sir. I have appreciation for you.
All right, Cliff. My pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Thank
you. Blessed.
Yes, sir. Candace?
One, two, three, four. Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving.
There's a song, 20 years old. There's a song, 20 years old, that's relevant today. You know, we got to find how to spend money with ourselves. Keep the dollar in the black community. Black people and spending power. We were worth 19th, 13th in the world in spending power, the kind of money that the black community generates in America. How much of that did we spend with ourselves? Joe Biden raised $100 million after this woman was nominated for the Supreme Court. They raised $100 million the next day. Mike Bloomberg gave the Democratic Party $100 million just for Florida. Another organization gave him $85 million. How much of that money has the Democratic Party spent in the black community? Have they hired us for troops on the ground? Have they hired our printing companies? Have they bought ads in our black newspapers? Our black radio station? I mean, what's really going on? What's really going on? You know, if you drive your car and don't put no gas in it, it's going to stop. Okay? You make all this money in the black community and don't put nothing back in the black community, the community is going to die. Again, we got these black preachers. Every Sunday, the money they collect for these tithes and offerings, they collect this money on a Sunday and take it to a bank on a Monday that won't loan them a dime, the white bank. What's going on with that?
a song that's so relevant today. I want to say, what's going on? And let me tell you something else. Some of these people in Illinois put up a life savings to get a marijuana distributorship, and then black people got none. $30,000-$40,000 they spent for a distributorship, and they got none out of it. In January, marijuana was legalized here in the state of Illinois, and so far, the state has made $300 million. $300 million the state has made just on their taxes. That's the taxes that the city has made, the state has made. Not what the dispensaries have made. That's just the taxes Illinois has got off of marijuana sales. How much of that money have we gotten? What's really going on? President Trump, do you really have the virus? Today, the doctor came outside and said that he was okay. Yesterday, they said he wasn't okay. Have they given a virus? Have they given him this vaccine? And he's going to come out tomorrow and say, I'm healed? Or was he ever really sick? And then we talk about his wife. She had a kidney problem. Had she gotten that virus, she'd be in the hospital somewhere. You know, what's really going on? Matter of fact, let's talk about Dr. Dre. Dr. Dre and his wife of some 20-odd years, they getting a divorce. And for spousal support, she wants $1.3 million a month for spousal support. Man, what's going on? Then you got a situation with Lisa Ray. I worked for her daddy, Ray McCoy. Lisa Ray, the actress. I worked for her dad. In case you didn't know it, the rapper, the brat, that's her sister. What's going on with that relationship? Something is going on. In Chicago, something is going on. We finally got our light nightclubs back open, our restaurants back open. Nightclubs now can stay open to 1 o'clock at night. Maybe saving them from going bankrupt. And speaking of going bankrupt, let's talk about Pembroke, Illinois. One of the poorest black communities in the state of Illinois, owned by black people. The land is owned by black people, okay? And they growing vegetables, and they call me asking me, would I ask the restaurants to buy their vegetables from them? But I'm trying to tell them, y'all need to start growing marijuana, because the law says that any marijuana sales in the state of Illinois, the marijuana got to come out of the state of Illinois. So they need to be growing marijuana instead of cabbages. Shelly, I wanted to hear from Shelly before we get out of here. How much time we got, honey? Candace, are you with me?
Yes, I'm with you. I'm with you. We have approximately 4 minutes. 4 minutes
about
left.
How long, baby?
Counting. 4 minutes.
About 4 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any way I can hear from Shelly before we get out of here?
Maybe. Shelly, if you're on the line, press 1. If there's anyone on the line that wants to say anything, that wants to make a comment, have a question, a concern, please press 1 on your dial tone. And let Mr. Cliff and myself know.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we need to just go ahead. I think Shelly is off and running. Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Hold on.
Okay.
Shelly Messian, hold on. Hi, callers.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello?
Yeah, do you have a question? You're live on the air?
Yep. Hold on.
Well, let me say this, Candy. You can tell whoever that is. Let me say this here, Candy. I just want to say on behalf of the Canon Media, we appreciate everybody listening to us tonight. We're going to be a show of information, something that can help my people, help my community. And I'm going to say that
I'm going to be pledging more energy than any other time to reparations.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in reparations. I believe in reparations. I mean, I'm going to be at it. Okay? There's all kind of ways that they got their knees on our neck. All kind of ways they got their knees on our neck. Okay? So I'm going to be about that. We're going to be about reparations. We're going to get this. And reparations is not about giving somebody some money in their pocket. It's you could almost follow the GI Bill where they was had educational opportunities, home buying opportunities, the whole nine yards. There's all kind of ways of reparations. And so therefore, I'm going to be working on it. So listen, on behalf of my show, which is Yes Chicago, Nick Cannon Media, AIA Inc., I want to say good night and thank you, people. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you. You guys have a good night. It happened. Nick Cannon Foundation.
That's it. Hey, baby girl. Hey, baby girl.
Hey, I had a great time in Chicago. Want everybody
thank
to know
you,
that.
Baby.
Nick Cannon Foundation had a great time with us. We were out there.
Thank you, baby.
Which whatever we got me out there in the
It's time
city.
For Just Chicago's Neighborhood Talk with Clifton Pierce. A Cannon Media and Axe Entertainment Artists, Inc. production.